This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2022, held at Faith Builders on August 2 through 5.
I am a school teacher, so of course I'm going to have to review a little bit with you here. So some quick review of where we've been. In the first session, we talked about mottos that define. Essentially wanting you to think about labels as either being meaningless things that we slap on something, or labels that can organize, define, and remind for us. I asked you to consider the labels that we use to organize, define, and remind ourselves about what we do, particularly the label Christian education, and challenged you to ask yourself if you have a sense for how it defines and reminds us about what we do. In the second session, Old School, New Clothes, we spent some time talking about good faith and bad faith, and really just recognizing that non-Christian education has an underlying philosophy that separates knowledge and faith. Christian education recognizes that all knowledge is a faith commitment. And I wanted to spend a little time looking at this, and I didn't have time, but I do want to just put a verse up here that comes to mind in regard to this, and that is Romans 1:20. And to just quote it here, for since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, and as we've studied Kant, remember that's the noumenal world, the things that we can't experience with our senses, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that people are without excuse. And so I submit again that Christian education recognizes that all knowledge is a faith commitment. It is not truly Christian to slap a Christian label on a Kantian view of life and then call it Christian education. So as Christian educators, I think that we must be cautious about criticizing our historical fear of higher education. I think it is actually grounded on some reasonable things. And the Bible actually warns us about that. And once again, I would just submit, we didn't have time to talk about that before, but the primary danger of the pursuit of knowledge, as the Bible describes it, is that it can puff up and make us arrogant, which I would submit is what this faith system ultimately represents. It's about ourselves. We can figure these things out, our own senses, our experience, and pursuit of knowledge at that level. And I think the Bible warns us against that. I would also just say that our story begins with this. The tree of knowledge was planted in the garden. And we recognize from that story that there is more to the picture than just our knowledge. And the devil tried to confuse Adam and Eve about that. And we have discovered quickly that there is more to the picture than our knowledge. They may have known good from evil, but there was more to it than just that. That the devil did not accurately represent. I do think that it is possible, and I'm not sure, maybe some of you would disagree with this, but I do think that it is possible to step into a secular institution of education and get a Christian education. I think that is possible. Based on a bit of what I think this drawing over here, sorry, my pointer is not very powerful, the drawing on your left represents, and that is that if one is rooted deeply and connected tightly into a healthy root system that is more wholesome, as the one over here on my right would describe, I think it is possible for one to be so deeply rooted into that root system that you could step into a secular institution and gain the knowledge of God at a place like that, and get a Christian education. I think that's actually possible. I would wager that we haven't had great success with that, and so hence we have some fears of this type of thing. It may potentially be my biggest worry within our Anabaptist circles, a greater openness to what we call secondary education. It's interesting, we looked at the timeline earlier this week where at one point the question was high school, and I won't ask you to raise your hands, but some of you are probably teaching in schools right now where the question is high school. Like, how high do we offer education for our students? So what grade level do we cut it off? And some of you are still working at developing high school. Some of you might be in communities where that's already been decided, and now the question is, well, what about college? So it's at a variety of places for us, but I don't think that the issue changes a lot. It's still a similar question. And for our people, probably the thing that gives me the greatest question about a greater openness to college education is actually how private it has become. Something that I simply decide to do on my own, and I go off and participate in this college education in more of a private way than belonging to a community school, for example. So if one were to be able to participate in this type of higher education, greater pursuit of more knowledge, and even in a secular institution, but it were done in a less private way, once again where someone was deeply connected in to the root system of our faith, I think that changes the picture a bit. So Christian education, I submit to you in this one, is about the whole root system. This whole root system, all of the things that are part of that, that is what Christian education is about. In the next session, we went a bit farther with that. I would say that, in fact, Christian education cares deeply about the quality of the soil that the root system is in. So not only are we about this whole root system, this holistic root system that involves many things beyond just the study of creation, we actually care about the soil in which those roots are embedded. And I submitted to you that Christian educators are not machete-wielding pirates. Christian educators are patient gardeners. We work on this soil. We invest in it. We do the inputs to create healthy soil that ultimately, I think, can feed a strong faith. And we described many of those things as mycorrhizae yesterday. And the final mycorrhizae that we looked at yesterday was the teacher. And I would wager the most important thing that I'm calling mycorrhizae. And so I would like to focus on that today. I would like to begin by modifying my title a bit. So I think I ended with a point yesterday that described this something like, you are education, or you are Christian education. I don't have that in front of my face right now. And I think that's a bit of an overstatement to potentially make a point. So I'd like to modify it to something that I think I can support more deeply, and that is this: who you are is what you teach. Now, we often think about this as critical advice for new teachers, but I recognize that you are not brand new teachers. Some of you have been in the classroom longer than I've been in the classroom. And so I realize that we often think about this in terms of people that are starting their journey as a teacher and that they ought to get a hold of this. But it's interesting, I would say, maybe this is an embarrassing confession on my part. I think that I've needed this reminder more as I've taught longer than I did when I began. And that is why I actually want to talk about it with those of you that have already been in the classroom for either some time or a lot of time. So I'm a bit embarrassed to say how easy it has become for me as a teacher to be mostly about developing systems that just simply make life easier for me. And I'm thinking about life in the classroom. So to develop systems that don't require me to study as much or that just take some work off my plate. And those are not bad systems, and that is a good thing to do. But the part that I'm embarrassed about is how much I've done that and how much my teaching life has been about accomplishing that task versus what I think a Christian educator is really about. Quick story for you. When I was growing up, we had an old John Deere 310 lawnmower. And my dad was a mechanic, and so we often had old pieces of machinery that required a fair amount of cajoling and massaging to make them work. And this lawn tractor was no different from that. It had several problems, but my brother and I, even at a young age, we knew how to deal with these problems. Now, if you would have just showed up and tried to mow our lawn, you would have been in some trouble because you probably would not have been able to even start the mower, let alone keep it running, because you wouldn't have known the tricks to keep our John Deere lawnmower going. These are two tricks you needed to know. One is that the solenoid was apparently going bad. And if you think about solenoids, they're like a little thing that switches that allows an ignition to work. And it was on the, you couldn't see it, but it was attached to the side of the tractor just kind of internally. And my brother and I always kept a hammer on the tractor because that thing would stick. And we just knew if you just smacked the tractor right there on the side, it would jiggle that solenoid and it would start. You had to whack it a few times. So you'd get on, turn the key, nothing would happen. You just get the hammer out in front of the seat and bam, 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 beat on a little bit, turn it again, and it would probably fire up. So the first thing you needed to know was something about the solenoid on the tractor. Second thing was that I guess it accumulated, so old it accumulated rust and things in the gas tank, and there was a fuel filter on it, so I don't think it was harming the engine, but apparently that would plug up the fuel flow now and then. And so you'd be mowing along during the middle of the day and that thing would shut off and you could get the solenoid to work and it still wouldn't start. Well, what you had to do is you had to take the hose off of the gas tank and then just blow backwards through it and blow air up into the gas tank and kind of blow all that crud out of the hole, I guess, that the gas came through. And then that would allow gas to flow back into the engine. You could mow again. So you needed to know those two things to run that tractor if you wanted to mow any grass in the course of a day. You know, it's interesting. I moved away from home and taught school in another community for a while and eventually moved back home. And at that point, most of my siblings had moved out. And so it was me and my one younger brother. And I realized that, okay, we were going to have to help mow the grass at my parents' property. And I told my dad, I said, look, you know, I'm in my mid-20s, I got things to do, and if we're going to mow grass, let's get a mower that can mow grass. And I said, is there any way you could afford a zero-turn mower? Let's get the grass mowed. And so we improved our mower. I don't think we went straight from the John Deere 110 to the zero-turn, but our mowers have improved over the years. And you know, now I've even, you know, looked online and I've seen the robotic mowers that you don't have to do anything. You can stay in the house, and I guess they'll just mow your lawn. I have questions about their effectiveness, but they exist. The question is, to what extent is there value in improving our systems? You know, the John Deere 110 to the robotic mower is quite an improvement on one hand. And sometimes I find myself wanting to teach a bit that way. Improve my systems all the way to the robotic mower so that I can sit inside and sip my Coke and the lawn's being mowed. Essentially, another way of saying is remove myself from the classroom. Now, that's an extreme version of it. I'm confessing the temptation to do that. And I think the longer we teach, we have to watch out for that temptation because we get tired and we've worked hard and we want to find easier ways of doing things. Who you are is what you teach. And Genesis is an interesting term used to describe God. It's a Hebrew term, Yahweh Elohim. And this term really essentially means the God of Israel, the God of all creation. So Yahweh is the personal name for God that the Hebrews would have used. This is our God. He's the God who will redeem and save us. Elohim is the God of all of creation. I think the name communicates that the God who created the universe is the same God that leads his people out of bondage. And I think that's what is so fascinating or interesting about this name that they used for God. In other words, the Creator is the Redeemer. And I would like to submit to you that Christian teachers live in this reality, that the Creator is the Redeemer. We live in this reality. We live out of it every day. It is the life that courses through the veins of our minds, our hearts, our hands, is that the Creator is the Redeemer. But we are left with a more practical question in this case, and that is, how is God revealed as Creator and Redeemer in the learning and teaching of every subject matter? And I think this is why I care so much about this particular mycorrhizae, and that is that I don't know that this is actually manifested in any way as well as it's manifested in a living, breathing disciple of Christ. It's the only way that I think, or I shouldn't say the only way, it is the best way for this to be a reality in our classrooms. It takes a person. In fact, I would submit to you that this is really the message of Jesus. This is what the incarnation is about. That the Creator is also the Redeemer. It's the same God. And the incarnation is the manifestation of that in a living, breathing body like us on the earth. And Jesus comes, and in a sense, that's why I think we sometimes talk about him as the master teacher. Jesus also said while he was here, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. I have two observations about that. The first observation is that the Christian teacher is not the way, the truth, and the life. We can get over fascinated with the ways that we're like Jesus. We must recognize that we are not Jesus. The second observation, however, is that there is a personal dimension to knowledge and education that is a central root from which all learning originates, grows, and reaches its purpose. And that is something we can participate in, this personal dimension. So while we are not the way, the truth, and the life, we do actually bring a personal dimension to truth, to knowledge, that I think is a critical root of Christian education, as demonstrated by Jesus, for that matter. So, who you are is what you teach, and I have a number of things that I would like to submit to you. As seasoned teachers, as people that have been in the classroom for a while, maybe more to remind you than to tell you something new, because I think those of us that have taught for a while need to be reminded of this. First, the Christian teacher embodies the why. How do students see you using your knowledge? I've had to fight or struggle against this different times, you know. And once again, it's a bit of embarrassing confession, but it is easy to use our knowledge to debunk someone else. That's not always wrong. There are untruths that need to be debunked. But I hope that's not the primary way that our students see us embodying the why of our knowledge. Why do we know things? I sure hope we don't communicate to them by the way we live that we know things so that we can prove other people to be wrong. That is a temptation for the Christian teacher. And as I said, there's a place for that. Hopefully the longer we teach, we get wiser about discerning where that is and where that is not. I think that when we teach for a while, we can also become a little calloused and a little rough. And we have to watch out for that. You know, one of the things in our community that I am impressed by or proud of, and that is that we have a number of people that have entered into the medical field here, either as nurses or EMTs or even a few as doctors. And I really like that because I see that as people using their knowledge of the human body to help people and serve others versus using their knowledge of the human body to just lash out at those who are superstitious and don't know anything about how we function. And we have plenty of that type of thing in our circles, I think. And so there's a place to talk about that and to bring some clarity to what is true and what is not true. But I primarily hope that we demonstrate service rather than degradation. Secondly, the teacher is the living embodiment of what the student should become. And I'm talking here practically in a specific subject matter. So you, I don't know what you teach, but think about whatever it is that you teach. And the teacher ought to be the embodiment of what it would be like to be a Christ-like learner of this subject matter and a Christ-like knower of this subject matter. Obviously, we've learned this early on, that you have to bring a bit of passion to what you're doing, or it probably doesn't represent that. And once again, that's where I come back to those of us that have taught for a longer time. It's easy to start out with a lot of oomph. You teach the same thing 5 years, and you start to dry up on it a little bit. It's just not the same passion and care for what you have to offer to your students. You know, there's been a few things that I've actually had to try to like drum up a little passion for. We needed a chemistry teacher here when I came here to teach. And chemistry was not particularly my thing. I had had it in high school and it went okay, but I had never seen myself as a chemistry teacher. So Gerald asked me, he said, would you be willing to teach chemistry? And I said, well, I mean, I'll do whatever we need to do. I'm not dying to teach chemistry, but if we need a chemistry teacher, then sure, I'll teach chemistry. Well, you know, the first year of teaching chemistry, I had to drum up a little passion for that because that has not really been the thing that I've really cared about before that time. But I purposed in my heart at that time that I would. If we were going to have chemistry, we were going to have a good time doing it. I was going to try to just be honest with the students at the beginning of the year and say, look, I'm learning this too. Let's dig into this. It's worth knowing. And you know, I was surprised. I kind of surprised myself as I dug into chemistry how fascinated I was with it. And we learned together that first year. And I'm not sure that at the end of the year if the students or I knew more. I'm really not sure. There were some really sharp students in there that may have known more than I knew about chemistry after the first year. You know, the thing that I feel bad about is that I'm not sure if I could do that as well now as I did then. I was young and had the energy to tackle things. And I have to be reminded about that sometimes, I think, to bring that kind of passion to what I do years in. Your systems, including your lesson plan, should not eliminate you. Earlier, I had mentioned, asked the question, how would you know a Christian lesson plan from a non-Christian one if it didn't have the labels and phrases that we're used to seeing in it? One of the things that I think distinctly makes a lesson plan Christian is when it brings you to the classroom and allows you to actually, your person, to impact that lesson. It is okay for that lesson plan to require you to teach it and not someone else. Now, there's some pragmatism here that I think we do have to be aware of, and that is all schools know that we have this revolving door where teachers come and go, and so it sure is nice to have materials that when one teacher goes, another can pick them up and teach it. I get that pragmatism, and that's a real thing too. You obviously didn't go yet, so I think that this is a group of people that it's okay to say, your lesson plan can require you, that someone else may not be able to just pick it up and do it because they're not you. And they may potentially have to do some things a little differently than what you would do then. Plan your systems so that they require you. You need to have time to engage with your students outside of class. I'm not talking about some rampant social life here. You know, I started teaching school as a single guy and taught for a number of years as an unmarried man, and it was really easy to engage in the social life of my students outside of the classroom. Life circumstances can change what that looks like, but it does not change that reality that the Christian teacher should be engaged with our students beyond the class to some extent. And I think that we can be creative in the ways that may manifest itself. I think it may be different for you than for me, but it's something that we ought to care about. I've had to fight that the longer I've taught because, you know, I don't have as much energy to be engaged with my students outside of the class as I used to have. And some of their activities are just a little more tiresome than they used to be to me. I thought at one time I would never grow tired of playing softball or soccer or things like that with my students. You know, I surprised myself. Recess rolls around, I think I could go out and play with them. Like, I'll just barely be warmed up by the time we're done. Because it takes me a long time to get the joints going again now. And some of you might know about that even more than I. It takes energy the longer we teach to stay engaged with our students beyond the classroom. I've had to challenge myself with that. You need to have time to engage with life outside of the classroom. There's another way of saying this. A teacher can just simply become boring. And I don't mean boring as in presentation. You can potentially just come to have a boring life. Now, that's a pretty broad stroke there, but I think that's how it appears to students sometimes, where they look at us and they, well, it just looks like a boring life. You actually can do something about that. For one thing, the student may just simply be wrong. They may not understand what is exciting and what is boring, and they will someday have a greater sense for what is exciting and what is boring. But there is such a thing where as we live and as we get in our ruts, that it actually is a reality that we quit engaging with life. We need to stay excited about living. And as we've already heard this week, continue to be learners, to engage with things that captivate us, and to share that with our students. Once again, your lesson plan can include those things. You bring your excitement for life with you to the classroom, and I'll just reiterate, I think that's as important for seasoned teachers as it is for new teachers. You know, this summer, I got engaged with something that I thought I hate, and that is I do not really enjoy mechanic work. My dad is a mechanic, and so I've had a desire to do as much of my mechanic work for myself as I can. Not because I love mechanic work, but because I'm a teacher and it costs a lot of money to take your vehicles and things to a mechanic. And so it's a bit of a pragmatic result of the teacher life. But I actually dislike mechanic work. And so I do it begrudgingly. And I have a tractor that required, it had some issues this summer, and so I started to pursue the problem with my dad, who's a good mechanic. And the problem went on and went on and went on. And my wife could tell you more about it. She got sick of me saying, I'm going off to work on the tractor. And then it'd be like, after dark, I would show back. I'm like, did you find anything? Nope. We tried a lot of things, parts in, parts out. It was with the hydraulic system. We got on the phone with seasoned hydraulic mechanics. Honestly, I learned so much about the hydraulic systems of farm all tractors this summer. I'm half passionate about them now. I had hydraulic pumps apart. I know how a hydraulic pump works now. I know what pieces of metal when they wear will make a hydraulic pump quit pumping oil. I know where there's check valves that make power steering function with the other parts of a tractor. I could talk for an hour about the hydraulic system on my tractor to you all. It's actually kind of interesting. I won't do it to you. But I plan to tell my students about my journey into hydraulic systems when they come back to school this year. There are some interesting things to be learned about hydraulic systems. And I think there are some fascinating things there, even though I hate mechanic work. You need to have time to engage with life outside of class. Christian educators are fed by the word and fellowship with the saints regularly. I think this is one of those things that is possibly somewhat obvious, but we just have to remind ourselves. And I'll go a bit farther and say, live this with your students. You know, I still have memories. My first memories of teachers are from when I was like 4 or 5 years old, because my dad was a teacher. And so I grew up around teachers. But the interesting memory that I have about teachers is not even about my dad. It was about two men in my church that were young men that had decided to be teachers. And you know what I remember about them when I was 4 years old? They were song leaders in my church. And I thought they were so cool because I would go to church and I would see them standing up front leading singing. It may have been the first fascination with music or love for music for me. I'm not sure. These guys were teachers, and I saw them taking part of this. I witnessed it. Our students are watching us, so this is not just some private thing. Yes, it's important for us to have our private devotions and feed from the Word of God in that way. I think it's important for us to do these things with our students. Hopefully they see us engaging at this level. They see us engaging with the food of the Word and the fellowship of the saints, and they know that we do it regularly. We already mentioned Sabbath rest yesterday. I'm not going to say much more about that today. But I do think that it's something that as we teach, we must be reminded of. The longer we go, we have to rest. And then the last one, maybe one of the more controversial ones in this list, I'm not sure. But I think that we should be careful here. Educational efforts should not become so large or complex that they become primarily administrative projects. This is the problem when you do something for a long time as it continues to grow and grow and it becomes more complex and more complex, and our systems can soon become systems that own us. I think we should be careful that they don't become so large that they become primarily administrative projects. Every school needs administration. That is a critical skill, and I would wager that our churches and our schools don't have enough of it. I think that is true. I would also hope that we do not become a people that become over-fascinated with administration. You know, it's interesting. I don't know if, you know, once again, I don't know what your interaction is with more mainstream Christian education, but you know one of the strong emphases out there is leadership. Like, every child is going to become a leader. And if you don't, then you're unsuccessful. And I'm not convinced that every one of us should become a leader at that level where we're managing people and bossing people around. That is not the definition of success. I hope that we continue to be a community that values good administration, but that our Christian education does not become a primarily administrative project. So I'll end with, who we are is what we teach. If there's anything that makes an education a Christian education, I think it's this. And I've submitted other things along the way. But if you forget all of them, I think this is the one to remember. That who we are is what we teach. Jesus said, Jesus said, follow me. Because I think he understood this. Who he is what he taught. I think the Christian teacher says, follow me as I follow Christ. Follow me into literature. Follow me into chemistry. Follow me into math as I follow Christ. And you are the living, breathing embodiment of what that looks like in that particular subject matter. I bless you and pray that as you go into your classrooms, that you can be that this year. You know, something I didn't have time to tell, and I'm not going to tell it now, but my story actually did not begin with Christian education. I set out to be a public school teacher. That's what my heart was set on. That's where I was aiming. That's what I told my dad I wanted to do. And I have no problem with that. Sometimes I still think someday I may do that. I'm not sure. But I've been captivated by Christian education in the meantime. And I changed what I was about. And there are many men that could be given some credit for bending me, bending my heart towards that. Won't name all of them right now. But that is my story. And so my heart is, at this time, invested in Christian education, opposed to secular education. Not as against it, as that's evil, this isn't. But it's where I'm invested right now. So I come back to the original question that I began these sessions with. I have a son that, Lord willing, will enter school next year. And I had the question, in school we trust? You know, the answer to that for me is yes. I do trust our efforts in our Christian schools. But not because our systems are so good. Not because the teacher is so smart. Not because the teacher says a prayer before we duke it out on the basketball court. Those aren't the reasons that I do have trust in Christian education. I say yes to that question because the teacher is a living, breathing embodiment of the kingdom to come. And the teacher knows that the Creator is the Redeemer. You know, I'm excited to send my son to school when he's ready because I've watched Miss Yoder, who teaches here at our school, and I know that she first knows Jesus. And I know that because she knows Jesus, She has pursued the knowledge and expertise that is required to be a good first grade teacher. That is why I'm excited to send my son to first grade. In school, we trust? No, not really. In God, yes. And his manifestations in you, in our schools. Blessings on you as you embody the kingdom in your schools this year.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.